Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on dailyfaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 102 of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli, Tyler Yaremchuk on holidays. This week he's tired from the All-Star weekend. He was pretty busy. Frank, how you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, Tyler had a lot of fun. We were living vicariously through Tyler.
Yeah, well, I'm curious to see. I just want to know how much did he lose or win gambling? Because let's be real, that's the main reason why he went.
All I know is that he sent me a quick text. You know, he might have only been there a few hours. Like, hey, up a few $100. And I didn't hear from him since. So hopefully that means good things.
All-Star weekend. I thought there was a real lots of positives about the weekend. Well, what did you say top to bottom?
I mean, just like any normal All-Star weekend, like there were a bunch of things that worked and were cool. A few things that kind of missed. I wish I was there just to understand what the feeling was like in the arena while they take a pause and then roll the tape of the two events that were executed outside the day before. Like, that's 15 or 20 minutes of people in the arena just sitting there doing nothing. Like, it had to be odd, you know, in arena. I think the fan watching at home, you know, might not have been any of the wiser, but I think the fountain shot worked, not so much the 21. Like, first off, all the guys got to 21 without busting. Second, it was odd. Like, there was like cards falling, lights shattering. Like, I don't, it just, there wasn't enough commentary. There wasn't enough trash talk between the guys to really make it in. Like, everyone was mic'd up. Like, it just seemed a little bit sterile. And I think the guys were saying it was so cold in Vegas, like as cold as it really ever gets there, that they were like, they were legit freezing.
Yeah, well, that's the part that had me chuckling a little bit, Frank, to be honest, coming from Northern Canada, where it's cold and it's been raining and then it's been minus 25 and then it's been plus 8. And you're in Vegas of all places where, you know, you should be out there shirtless half the time because it's nice. And the players are freezing. So
it was like 6 or 8 degrees Celsius, you know, like 48, 52 degrees somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, you can't even rely on like the hot places in the NHL to be hot right now, which is crazy. But
what do you think? The Zegras one, like that, the breakaway challenge was awesome, but it was kind of ruined at the end.
I don't understand. Now, I thought, okay, maybe I'm missing something. There was like a fan vote because it's in Vegas, and so the hometown guy, but there wasn't. So I'm like, How does a guy who doesn't score, who gets a second chance with a really lame attempt with just the band guys coming down, like compared to what Zegras did, like I watched the Zegras move, I want to say legitimately like 30 times because I was like the blindfold, I'm not, you know, maybe it was partially see-through, I don't know. But it was more so the movement of the stick holding onto the puck. And I'm like, hey, he's got to have some.
And to not get hit by a dodgeball.
But, oh, yeah. Well, plus, I love dodgeball. So, how do you not like a Peter LaFleur reference? I was all over that. But, like, Zegras, and the thing was, I watched his Michigan goal. And then I watched that, like his ability to change how you stick handle the puck and really how you handle the puck. I'm not saying that the game's going to massively evolve from it, but you know that kids are watching that and they're going to try it. And so I've always said, if you suddenly have one player per team in the NHL who's comfortable trying and completing the Michigan in flight like Zegras was, that it's a wraparound that's just more effective because most wraparounds can only score on the ice. Like it's a really new dimension to the game potentially. And what he did in the All-Star game, Frank, honestly, I never seen anything like that before. That was amazing to me.
There's so many levels to it. And the fact that you only get one take to get it right, he nailed it. Every part of it, the blindfold, missing a dodgeball, the puck on his stick, like he was yo-yoing it. And then to not only hit the net, but to score perfectly, like, it was beautiful, but then we end up with Alex Pietrangelo as the winner and John Hamm, who said before they even went out on the ice, oh, he's such a big St. Louis Blues fan. He said, all I know is Alex Pietrangelo is getting a little extra help tonight. Like he said it on the broadcast on ESPN. Then Pietrangelo goes and he gives him a 19. Somehow the NHL on a 10 scale, he gives him a 19, holds up the one and the nine. And somehow the NHL is like, yeah, that's cool. No problem. We're going to count the 19. Like what?
Yeah, it was
Pietrangelo's thing wasn't funny. It wasn't imaginative. It wasn't cool. There was no skill to it. And I was like, what? Like you had this viral moment again that it was all anyone was talking about on social media was Zegras. And Alex Pietrangelo goes in the record, like, again, not to say that the record matters, but he goes down in the books as the winner of the breakaway challenge.
No, I didn't understand it. Like, you know, DeBrincat was funny. Hughes was imaginative. Kids would have loved that little mini Jack Hughes and the stick toss. But yeah, Pietrangelo, who's from Vegas, that's what, like, Vegas is one of the best teams at being creative. And because I have to think that maybe someone in your organization's helping you, but I thought that was my only real beef with the whole weekend was how they botched what was kind of bordering on the marquee event.
Yeah, I mean it kind of was the marquee event. It was, I thought, you know, fastest skater, just everyone going through one time. I feel like with fastest skater, you got to cut it from 8 to 4 to 2 and have some, you know, the winner's got to skate 3 laps. I guess that's too much to ask. Hardest shot, it felt like the numbers were like oddly, I don't want to say rigged, but like how do you go from 91 to 102 in 2 separate shots? That felt weird. I don't know, like again, there were some things that hit, some things that missed. There's just like any normal All-Star weekend, they're constantly making tweaks. All in all, I think it ended up being fine.
Oh, yeah. No, overall, I think it was great. It was just I was perplexed by the breakaway challenge. And, you know, my son's 8 years old, and I think the All-Star game is definitely, you know, it really inspires young kids. He was watching that move, and him and his buddies were in the garage later at 8, and they're trying it. And they're getting frustrated. Dad, he must have glued it to a stick. And I'm like, honestly, no, there's no glue.
Your point is well made, though, because my guy, that's the first, he's 7. That's the first NHL event this season. Game, whatever it is, special draft, not like that's the first event all season he watched start to finish and loved it.
Oh yeah. Like that was, I'll give the NHL, you get the young jet, but even my son watched, he's like, well, Dad, that one was boring about Pietrangelo's, like his words, 8-year-olds, any parent out there knows anybody who deals with kids. They're bluntly honest. They'll tell you exactly what it was. And I was like, yeah, you're right. It was.
Yeah. I mean, hey, but I guess that's really what it ends up being all about, right? It's not really what you or I think. It's the kids that are watching.
And Claude Giroux wins the MVP. And I see a lot of people, you know, little hints, oh, Jesus, trade value. I'm like, well, I don't know, sure, the MVP of a 3-on-3 short tournament matters. But Claude Giroux, it's interesting, Frank. You know, he's got the 1,000 games that he can get with the Flyers before the trade deadline, which I think is important for him and the organization. Mm-hmm. But he's got a massive cap hit. Fleury's got a massive cap hit. Phil Kessel, like guys who, you know, two of them have won Stanley Cup. Giroux's an elite player, one of the best faceoff guys in the league. Really good power play player. I don't discount that teams are interested, but it's interesting how creative the deals are going to have to be to get these guys to new teams.
It feels like this is the year of the third-party broker. The old chop twice. You're going to have to get some of these guys in order to make the cap hits work for 25% of what they're currently making. And so you do that by sending them to a middle team and a middleman and having them retain half as well, in addition to the original team. And there's actually lots of teams that aren't in playoff spots that are quite capable of doing this. The Arizona Coyotes have already let everyone know, hey, we're willing to utilize our cap space, which is, it's decent, but not, you know, it's not a never-ending supply of cap space in order to make it work. But there's lots of teams sort of in that world, the Sharks, Devils, Kraken, the Sens, the Red Wings, the Blue Jackets, the Ducks, the Sabres. Like, these are all teams that if they're not utilizing their cap space to try and get a pick back, I mean, essentially what it comes down to, Jason, is buying draft picks, you know, and they all have a cost of doing business, a cost associated with them. Everyone knows on their draft value chart approximately how much each pick is worth. And, you know, that's an easy, simple way for teams that have space that otherwise would not be utilized this season to then trade some of that cap space in exchange for a pick.
Well, and the other thing, Frank, is now this is not scientific by any stretch of the imagination. It was just me looking at things, and there's been a change really when you look at the amount of impact free agents are making on contending teams. Like look at Tampa Bay. Their deals were either drafts or trades. I'm not sure they had one free agent that played any significant role on their team. And even if you go back in the salary cap era, where I know free agency is still a big day in the summer, but I think teams, the importance of draft picks now, I wonder if we're seeing a change, Frank, in teams recognizing that a free agency is not like, that's where you go to overpay and get under delivery at the end. And, you know, the more draft picks, obviously it takes you many years and probably a lot longer than people think when it comes to a true rebuild. But looking at my numbers, and I'm compiling an article, so it's just the start of it. But it does seem to be that there's been a lowering of the impact of free agents
on, it depends,
successful teams.
It depends on who you're talking about. Like, I think Artemi Panarin might go down as one of the best free agent signings ever.
Yeah, but they've yet to win is all I'm saying, right?
No, but they're now in a contender window and they have Artemi Panarin. Their window's just opening this year and they have Panarin for four more years after this.
Yeah, he could be the Chara. You're right. Like Zdeno Chara for Boston, right? They won a cup in 11 at 5 years after they signed him as a UFA. But
I think free agency has value for players that aren't necessarily, you know, you have your top end guys, the 9, 10, $11 million guys that rarely ever make it to there, the true impact guys. And then you have that sort of, you know, window between $7 and $4 million where guys, I think to your point, more often than not, don't end up working out. But then I think there's the value guys, which I think is really the area where you can improve your team in free agency. Like you brought up the Tampa Bay Lightning, like, if they win the Stanley Cup again this year for the third straight year, it's going to be because of guys like Corey Perry and Pierre-Édouard Bellemare that really helped that team get back on track. I mean, like you look at Perry and the value that he's provided for a $1 million deal. Like he's got 23 points in 46 games, 12 goals. He's on pace for another 20 goal season for $1 million bucks.
Oh yeah.
On a team, on a guy that has gone to how many straight finals?
Yeah. But if you look, so let's say Corey Perry on a team that's 1-2, but like look at Colorado. Do they really have a big free agent that they've, you know, now Darcy Kemper, but that was almost because they lost their goalie, so they had no choice.
That was a trade.
Yeah. And, oh, right. It was a trade. Carolina, you know, you look at
Tony D'Angelo is
he's the best one. But again, like the bargain basement values, right? Like Tony D'Angelo is one of the best free agent signings if you look at per value in dollar. But
I think really, if you want to highlight the idea that free agency isn't the way to build your team, look at some of the teams at the bottom of the standings.
Yeah.
That's really where you're going to find it. You're going to see, those types of players on 5, 7, and $6 million a year cap hits that are really struggling.
Yeah. And it's also, I was looking at the realistic timeline of a rebuild. And I think a rebuild, Frank, people think you could do a rebuild in 2 or 3 years. I think honestly, it might be 8 to 10. If I look at the history of teams trying to properly actually rebuild, right?
Because I feel like the New York Rangers and their four are going to.
Yeah, well, New York's a little bit of an exception because of they had a short blip. They also, as you mentioned, you get Panarin, right? And they got lucky in the draft lottery, right? That can change things. You got to get some luck on your side for sure.
Steve Yzerman says pretty consistently that it takes 5 years.
Yeah,
he did it in Tampa. He took over in 10 and got them to the cup in 2015.
Yeah, but it,
he's
you
not
argue
doing
that's...
it in Detroit, and that team looks like he's in year 3, and that team looks like they're going to be a playoff team by year 5.
Yeah, but keep in mind there was 3 years prior to that, right? Where they kind of
That's not his fault.
No, but it's part of the rebuild, though. No,
I get. I mean, I don't know. Like, you could go back and look at the cap history. Like, I don't know that Ken Holland was really actively tearing it down. There were still a lot of contracts that Steve Yzerman inherited that he had to unload from Ken Holland.
And Tampa Bay, though, you would fair to say, though, the rebuild starts in 08 when they have Stamkos and then Hedman, right? Before he even gets there, because those are top two picks.
Right. But I guess the other point is like, okay, so it depends on who you're drafting, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, if you're drafting Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid, it's a 2-year to 3-year turnaround. But if you're getting, I don't know, Shane Wright, or if you're getting, pick another player that's gone number one that isn't a generational talent, then you're dealing with something different.
Yeah,
a lot of it's just luck.
Oh, well, that's a valid
word,
Frank.
That's the biggest factor.
Yeah. Like I'm curious about a team like Ottawa or even a team like Montreal. Like, people talking about how Montreal, they're just going to throw in the towel this year. I'm like, well, how are they going to turn it around? Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki aren't Matthews and McDavid.
Well, to your point, they also are saddled with long-term contracts that if you wanted to take it down to the studs, I'm not sure that you could.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Gallagher, Anderson, who's taking Mike Hoffman with 2 years on his deal? They probably should think about trading Tyler Toffoli. Jeff Petrie, it's not going to be a challenge, but you're going to have to bend a little in order to make it work. And then you're dealing with Carey Price and his contract.
Yeah, like the top teams, like look at Detroit. They were top for 25, I can't remember how many years it was, 25
straight years, I think,
And it's been now, 7 years they won't make the playoffs. Look at Chicago. When was the last time they made the playoffs? And do they have building blocks that make you look like they're suddenly going to make the playoffs again?
No.
Yeah. So it's an interesting one.
I guess what I'm saying is I'd have to read your story to really dive in, and I guess I'm combating against your idea of 8 to 10 years.
Yeah. Well, that was more, I haven't looked at that. Mine was more though, the free agency teams are actually, it's less of an impact for most big teams. Like Corey Perry, you're right, that's been great. Tony D'Angelo. But those are almost like, Corey Perry is a free agent, is under $1 million. He's coming there because he's a veteran on a team that's won 2 Stanley Cups. He just has to fill a role. If you go in free agency looking to have somebody that can be a star for your team, like look at even Toronto. Toronto went out and paid huge money for John Tavares and they've yet to win a playoff round.
That's probably the contract that hams up their entire salary cap picture. But at the same time, like I always am cautioned when I criticize that deal and some of the others that were made, because if you think about where we were when the deal was signed, like no one was envisioning a flat, like has any team been damaged more than Toronto with the flat cap world? like we were all expecting a, you know, a 3 to 4 to 5% increase every season. Had we not been in the flat cap world, like what would the salary cap be at this moment? Had we not, you know, hit the pandemic, we're talking about a cap somewhere in the 90s.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I think
so.
I think
so like, so if you're Toronto, you're going like, well, we signed all these guys thinking that we were going to have more additional space. Not all of a sudden our legs were going to be cut out from under us at, you know, for 3 straight years. And then it turns into 5 or 7.
Yeah. I think the concern is though, that you had 3 really good young forwards. What if you would have spent that money on defense or other areas? Because when you look at the champ, look at Tampa now. Tampa, we can say it's luck or whatever or skill, but they had they drafted elite forwards, elite defenseman, elite goaltender, right? LA, elite goaltender, elite defenseman, elite forward, right? Chicago is the only one who didn't draft an elite goaltender, but they had multiple forwards and multiple defensemen, mm-hmm. right? And so I think the one valid question over Toronto was you had legit forwards. Did you need another one who was going to be more expensive than the 3 you already had, or could you have spent that elsewhere? I think that's a fair question. Not that John Tavares is a bad player, but was that the piece they needed most in free agency?
Well, no. And I started out by saying it's,
yeah,
it's the contract that breaks them. I don't like, I think everyone would agree now. He's been almost exactly a point per game player since arriving in Toronto. 238 in 242.
Yeah, there's no problem with him as a player, right? It's just, was he the player that they truly needed? That's, right. I think, a fair question.
100%.
Yeah, and Frank, as we get to the dead, like the New York Rangers, we talk about them with Panarin. And do you think they stay patient? Because, and I don't really buy window, but when you look at their team and a lot of the core pieces of their team, like Chris Kreider's having an unreal year. He might score 50, which is crazy. But when you look at their team, Fox is I think right in his window of prime. You mentioned Panarin, obviously Chris Kreider, you know, Shesterkin's unbelievable. I know people talk about Kako and Lafreniere, but who knows how good they're going to be and when they're going to kind of emerge as legit superstars. If you're the Rangers, do you go for it this year?
I think you have to try. Like, I think you really, and maybe that's where acquiring a player with some term like a JT Miller really makes sense. Cause you don't, it's not just a one-off.
Yeah.
You know, you can fit him in your cap. You know, you could re-sign him if you wanted to. It makes too much sense. I think they should be really active, maybe not necessarily in the pure rental space, but you know, I always think back to, well, maybe one of the failings of the Oilers is thinking back to 2017 when they did get in and went and won a round, is did they not properly gear up then? Like, not saying they would have won the whole thing, but did they maybe take that year a little bit for granted and say, hey, we're building towards this and we think we'll eventually get to this. And then you never really know what happens. You know, the wheels fall off and you don't make the playoffs the following year. And then what?
2 years.
Yeah, but that's kind of, that proves my point, does it not? That maybe they should have taken the opportunity that they had then a little bit more seriously.
Well, yeah, don't get Order fans fired up about 2017. They're still mad about the overtime or the Kessler goal because they lost in 7 games. But you're right. Like, there was some people that said, hey, and David Desharnais was a good acquisition because he really won the one game in the San Jose series. He had an assist. He scored the overtime winner. So for a 5th-round pick for that one game, it's worth it. But doing nothing else, I think that's a fair question, you know, potentially on their back end because they didn't have a ton of experience. So, you know, you look and you're the Rangers. I think, Frank, it's not so much that you go all the way, but the more playoff experience you can get for your players, so you see that they become more comfortable in key stressful situations. I think that's what it's about. Like, it's very rare to see a team, like, look at how many disappointments Tampa had in the playoffs before they won. Like, obviously 2019 was crushing for them, but they lost the Stanley Cup with a lot of guys in 2015 in the final.
Look at St. Louis. Yes. Like, all these teams that finally broke through. The lesson, I think, is get as many kicks at the can as you can. Yeah. And if you're the Rangers, don't just sit back and say, well, our team's pretty damn good as assembled. We'll just take a run at it. you don't like you have no idea what the match. Maybe someone upsets Carolina in the first round and you get a better second round matchup than you thought. Like anything can happen. And I think that's the one sort of cautionary tale. You know, looking back on the Oilers, they finished that year 2017 with the fifth most cap space. They didn't do everything they could.
No, that's valid. And I wonder how much, now it's a different manager, but I wonder how much that weighs. Like the Edmonton Oilers, they had a 15-game stretch that's such a real outlier to their other 27 games. It's mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Their goaltending, Frank, fell off a cliff, really, for 15 games. They had a combined 868 save percentage. 868! So sometimes we hear the number, so I crunched it. This is, even if you're just league average, let's say a 910, that means the opposition and your opponents,
that's above
you're allowing
average,
five more goals on every 100 shots, which is about three games. So you're allowing five more goals every three games. And the Oilers had 15 games. So that's 25 more goals just because you're having basically American League goaltending across the board for three games. I don't care if you want to blame, well, the players. Yeah, the players make a factor, no question. But when your goaltending's that bad, and so I look at the Oilers and I wonder, they got Kane, and you talk about getting lucky. In a sense, they got lucky, right? You get a top-line winger for $2 million cap hit who's going to be a legit player for your team. You had to give up nothing. I wonder if this is the year the Ken Holland has no choice in also a Pacific division that's not plush with a lot of top end teams. The Pacific doesn't have like Arizona's or Montreal's or really weak teams, right? I guess they got the expansion Seattle, but they got a lot of competitive teams, mm-hmm. but they don't have a great team. Vegas, maybe. But other than that, I think it's a wide open division. So you could easily win a round, if not two. And I wonder how aggressive Holland, along with his owner, Daryl Cates, are going to be.
I don't know how they could go forward and not get a goaltender. I really don't. I mean, what a disservice that would be to the team. Like, what's the status of Mike Smith at the moment?
The plan is that he could play tomorrow against Vegas. I think it's going to be depend on practice today, but that's their plan right now. Like there was a chance they could have played him last week, but they said, let's just rest another week.
Okay. So that will be his seventh game of the season.
Yeah.
He's 39 years old and Koskinen has proven, if anything, that he can't play for more than five games in a 2 week period. Koskinen can't play a playoff series. He can't handle the workload.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I don't know how you could possibly, with those two factors, knowing that Smith feels like he could go down at any minute again, and Koskinen, who can't carry the ball, you have to do something. Like I don't know how you could possibly look at your forward group, your McDavids and your Dreisaitls and your Nugent Hopkins, and say, hey, yeah, we're doing everything we can. I think that's ultimately what it comes down to at the end of the day. And I think my issue with the Kane signing, as much as he may help, you know, aside from the distraction part of it, just from a pure asset management standpoint, giving Evander Kane that cap hit at $2.11, it just further limits what you can acquire, you know, in terms of a goaltender. You pretty much have to move Koskinen the other way.
Well, I think you had to either way, though.
Maybe, but it would have decreased your cost.
Yeah. But you know what, Frank? Honestly think the Oilers lacking a legit scoring winger was massive. None of the winger, like Hyman's a good winger, but he's not a top line winger.
This is my only question when it comes down to the Evander Kane thing. Why did he have to get $1 million as a net?
Yeah.
Like, why wasn't it, you want to play in this league? Here's the 750,000 league minimum and we'll prorate it and you'll end up getting essentially half of that, 375 grand to finish out the year. Like why was there the $625,000 signing bonus?
I wonder how much of that is to potentially see if he signs another 1 year deal in the summer.
I think you deal with that after, and you also say you got to come in here and prove it. You prove it and we like you and you fit, then we'll sign you for more later. That's the whole point.
He had no
leverage.
Yeah, he didn't. I thought it was going to come in at 1.5. It came in at 2. I thought it'd be 1.5, right?
So I don't know. I mean, they got to get a goalie. They can't not get a goalie.
That's not going to be Trust me. I've spent weeks looking. Like, Marc-Andre Fleury, I've been told, is not coming to him.
He's not. No.
So that's their biggest challenge. I agree they need a goalie. Who, though? That's to me is going to be the question. Like, Dallas, if they fall out of it, that's the place that seems to make sense because they've got two
options. I was going
to
say, why not Holtby?
Holtby would be the one. I would go after Holtby. Hudobin makes no sense because he's got another year in his contract. That makes no sense to me.
Right.
But, you know, Holtby makes sense. Jaroha lacks bonus for next year, Frank. That's really what screws teams too.
So, he also has a no move, and I don't think he's that wild about going anywhere. Yeah. He has a full no move.
Yeah, well, there you go. So, like, there's just – that's the big – I think everybody agrees they need a goalie. Who do they go get? That's going to be the – but, hey, that's why you're a GM. If it was easy, everybody would do it. So you got to look at it, and you're going to have to figure it out. Now, before we get going, Frank, I do want to –
Wait. Yeah. We were just talking about 2017 and it got me thinking, were you surprised that Peter Chiarelli is interviewing? He interviewed on Sunday for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Well, no, the NHL, Frank, the NHL likes to, and I know people use the word recycle, and they recycle coaches and GMs for a few reasons, because there's a lot on the line for anybody when you hire someone who doesn't have experience and you don't know if they can win. And so Peter Chiarelli was an absolute tire fire in Edmonton. No one debates that. Heck, I think if you gave Peter true serum, he would say, yeah, I made some really bad moves. The Griffin Reinhart trade in itself might be the worst move they made of all the moves.
I was going to say, we could have a long debate about that because I don't know that that's the case. I think Strome for Spooner is horrendous, especially given – then what about Koskinen?
Yeah, well, Koskinen – but the reason Griffin Reinhart was bad, Frank, and I know they're not going to draft Barzal. That's fine. They could have drafted Shabbat. They could have drafted Kyle Connor. They could have drafted Samsonov. Like, they could have drafted so many players that were infinitely better than him, plus a second round pick. And I'm not like, I know that who knows if they would, I'm not saying they get Bolivier because that would have meant they would have had a trade up, you know, to get Beauvillier, but getting Griffin Reinhart, who wasn't even at the time top pair defenseman in the AHL, and you gave up the 16th pick. Like, seriously,
we could do a whole show. Strome's ranking.
Pretty bad too. You're valid.
Ranking those, and then that we haven't even mentioned Larson for Hall.
Yeah, or the Malucic signing at the time. Like, what you had Taylor Hall. You could have just signed Jason Demers and went Demers and Hall instead of Larson and Lucic. Like, that would have been, you know, pretty simple, but. I'm not surprised, Frank. Now, will he get the job? I don't know, because he does have he has won a Stanley Cup, and he has full marks for building that whole defense core in Boston, right? I can't take that away from him. I'm not one who says, well, his recent work automatically erases the good work, but has he learned from that? That's my question. Has he learned from it? Is he a good enough communicator? That would be my question. Because when Peter was in Edmonton, I don't think he was a very good communicator at all to people in his organization, to the media, to players, everywhere I turn for people in the own organization, he wouldn't even say hi to walking down the hallway. What? So that to me is, did he learn from that said, hey, you know what? Maybe I was too big for my britches because I won a Stanley Cup. I thought I knew everything. I don't know, but I'm not stunned. I'll probably be surprised if he gets the job though, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get the job. And sources indicated that Peter Chiarelli also interviewed in Anaheim as well. But it was early in the process, and I don't think they ever viewed him as a serious contender. So it's interesting that Chicago is taking a little bit of a different tact with this, that they are announcing who they're interviewing. You know, they mentioned Scott Mellenby. I think Eric Tolsky from the Carolina Hurricanes is a very legit candidate. You know, I'd be knocking down doors to try and get someone like Eric Tolsky running my franchise.
I'll say this, Frank. I think it's a wise decision by the Chicago Blackhawks. NFL teams do it all the time. And there's no league in North America that their fans, like, they drink the Kool-Aid every day. They crush it in the big jugs. When you give your fans as much information as you can, here's the seven guys we interview, because the worst is it comes out afterwards. Hey, you know what? Rumors in the NHL, oh, they interviewed this guy. Then 6 months later, someone's like, well, actually, no, they didn't interview that guy. Why not say, hey, here's the six we interviewed. We ended up with this guy. Now, you can have people that are going to debate, well, why didn't you hire? Some people might say in Chicago, well, if they hire Tulowski, for argument's sake, right? Well, why didn't you hire Chiarelli? It gets people talking about your organization, which is, that keeps them engaged.
I don't think there's any harm to it.
I think it's a great decision.
People like me from constantly poking around, trying to get information that people don't want out there.
Yeah, no, I applaud them for all the bad decisions they made. I would applaud. This is the smart decision. And I would think more NHL teams moving forward should do it.
I think they have a couple more interviews to conduct. I think they're going to end up with somewhere around 5 to 6 candidates when it's all said and done. That includes Kyle Davidson, who was the first person to interview.
Yeah. Now, do you think he's still the favorite?
I think so, just because I think there is a comfort and a almost like a devil you know type of feel that he's been very communicative. He's been upfront. He's involved the owners and the team president, Jamie Faulkner, in all of the decision making and thoughts. I think he's sort of been waiting to put his own stamp on the team. And I think the deadline was going to be one of those avenues, if he was still in charge as the interim, that he would have gotten an opportunity to do so. But I think just hearing Eric Tulsky in the mix makes me wonder, because, you know, as much credit goes to Don Waddell for his job managing Tom Dundon, the owner there, and managing up, I don't know that there's anyone better in the league at it. That Eric Tulsky has really been the brains behind the operation and a big reason why the Hurricanes are right at the top of the standings in the East.
Now, speaking of the Blackhawks, Frank, twofold. Of course, there was the Rocky Wirtz. I really don't understand what he was thinking to a very easy and fair question from Mark Lazarus at their town hall. Bettman's reaction. And then the news coming out today that they fired a longtime head athletic trainer, DJ Jones, for allegations of sexual harassment to a member of the team's ice crew. He was with Rockford for 16 years, and supposedly he got let go in November. Two very different stories. But when you're the Blackhawks, and because of the recent history, are you surprised at all? And I know it's an American League affiliate, that there wasn't even a press conference in November, say, not a press conference, but a press release saying, we have released DJ due to these allegations. We take it very serious. But it had to come out 2 months later. What do you make of that? Anything?
It's almost 3 months later. Not really. And I know that a lot of people want to point to the Blackhawks and say, this is a team of villains. They're all, you know, the whole organization is corrupt. There's something wrong with leadership. And watching Rocky Wirtz and his outburst, I don't know that you'd be wrong with that assessment. But I think you need to be careful in terms of pointing fingers and painting with a really broad brush, because for one, there's like, for every player in this league, and there's 700 and some, there's like 3 or 4 times the amount of support staff that's around a team. You're talking 2,500, 3,000 people that are interacting with just at the NHL level alone. There's bound to be a few bad actors or bad apples in all of them. The fact that this person ends up in Chicago and worked for the Rockford Ice Hogs, like, I don't really know what one story has to do with the other that, like, if that trainer worked for, pick a random team in the NHL, the Florida Panthers, like, does that story even make a headline?
No, but probably not. But I think the difference is it's more so that you could have been in front of the story, right? And just
but how many teams would be announcing an AHL firing? That's my only question.
No, I agree. But this team, because of what happened, because of them you know, all the allegations of covering up what happened to Kyle Beach for a long time and knowingly trying to cover it up, that they, and hey, they did the right thing, but it was almost like, it was like they didn't want more news. And when you look at Rocky Wirtz, and by the way, his own son, Danny Wirtz, I give him credit. He tried to stop his dad from making an ass of himself, you know, and, you know, dad tried to, you know, the power move to his grown son at that town hall, which, because you could tell Danny was just like, No. Like, he wanted to ask the question because
they've actually done the work.
Yes.
That's what I agree. That's my issue, is that
yes,
the Blackhawks have implemented a lot of different policies and have gone way above and beyond what the NHL has asked of them, and have been in direct communication and have sort of been at the forefront in terms of being leaders in that space since then. Danny Wirtz is the guy with the boots on the ground every day. Rocky Wirtz is the chairman that's sort of, you know, I don't want to say out of the picture, but he's not as heavily involved. Danny's the CEO of the team, the chief executive officer. And so he's doing the work. And sources indicated to me that he had a very emotional meeting with Blackhawks staffers the following day, saying that this was the most disappointed he's ever been in his dad. That it was something that obviously really upset him and the team. And I think they realize now the damage that it's done. But I think that's what's problematic or probably most upsetting for the Blackhawks, is that they've actually been doing the work, and a 30-second tantrum from Rocky Wirtz over something that it was a tantrum over something that wasn't, he made up in his own head.
Yeah, I agree. But that's why, and the Black, because they have more lights on them. And I agree with you. There's lots of people that aren't deserving of the lights, but they inherited the problem, right? And guilt by association, whether that's fair or not. And so I just wonder if in the case of Rockford, had they sent out the release, this is what we've done, people would be like, wow, they're taking this serious. Because as you said, Frank, no team ever does that, right?
Can they never legally announce. Do that? Like, can you legally send out a press release saying we fired this person for this reason?
Well, if there's cause, I think you could. That's a good question. I'd like to ask.
I don't know the answer to it, but I'm just thinking, is there something relating to defamation? I don't know.
Well, but if it's true, it's not defamation, right?
But do they had they proven it, I guess, is the point. Or is it just that an allegation was made and they washed their hands of it?
Yeah, well, that's fair. I would like to think that they maybe did their due diligence, but you never know. I will say about, you know, the Rocky Wirtz situation, Frank, it's very unique how, if you go way back to the early 2000s, Rocky took over from Bill when the organization was completely going the wrong way. And he changed a lot of things, right? Got them back on TV and did so many great things. And now you fast forward to 2022, and now it's his son, Danny, for a completely different reason, has to sit there and say, Dad, I think it's time you move aside. And, you know, Danny should be the more of the public face now, because Rocky's outburst to me just shows he's not capable of having a conversation that wasn't even that uncomfortable at all. The question wasn't uncomfortable. The question was saying, basically, I think Mark Lazarus knew that the team had done some stuff. He wanted to give the organization the opportunity to say, this is what we've done. And Wirtz completely botched it.
I mean, I think Sheldon Kennedy said it best. This type of behavior is exactly how people get hurt. The whole panel was frozen in fear to speak up. That's a quote from Sheldon Kennedy. This is the exact behavior that needs changing, period.
100%. Like, what the NHL, and like Gary Bettman's, it's an emotional response. Rocky's had a lot on his plate. I'm sorry, Gary. Like, that does, what the NHL should have done out of that, Frank, if they want to show they're serious, they just said, we're putting Rocky in and he's going to take a sexual, understand how victims of sexual assault, because it's not just Kyle Beach there that's watching that. There's tons of Chicago Blackhawk fans and NHL fans who sadly have been the victims of sexual assault. The data doesn't lie. It doesn't matter what race you're from, what city you live in. It impacts millions of people in North America. No question. And so the NHL could say, you know what? We're going to put him in a course so he could truly understand how his words in that moment are so devastating.
Again, I think more problematic than all of that, if we're really going to talk, we're going to have real talk about the Wirtzes and the investigation, is that they were never actually questioned. So, like, let's rewind back to October. The investigation report comes out. They listed all the people that were interviewed as part of the investigation. The Blackhawks funded the investigation. And at no point in the 100 and some pages did the report indicate that either Danny Wirtz or Rocky Wirtz were interviewed.
Yikes.
So it also exonerated them and said that they had no knowledge of it. But did you ever ask on the record?
Yeah.
I think you couple that with that outburst and you can see why it's not just disappointing, it's wrong.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Don't question me. I'm the chairman, I'm the owner of this team. It was the defiance, it was the anger, it was the you can't touch me attitude that I think it speaks to a way larger thing than just hockey. Like it speaks to what everything that's wrong in our society, it feels like at the moment, with billionaires telling everyone else where to get off. Yeah, that's really what it comes down to.
Well, and people in positions of power, Frank, and ultimately that's what a lot of sexual abuse is about, unfortunately. And I think it's one where I don't think there'll be people that will forgive Rocky at all. Right.
They shouldn't, because it wasn't even an apology that we got.
No, it wasn't an apology at all. Exactly. And to be that emotional, the thing was, the question was so it was a very easy question. It wasn't attacking whatsoever. And that
wasn't even looking back on 2010. No. It was looking forward, which is why he said, we're not going back. It was like, the questioner wasn't trying to take you there.
Yeah. No, I didn't get it at all. So that's a disappointing one for the Blackhawks. And one last one on that organization, complete kind of full circle with their GM. What do you make of the rumblings of Alex DeBrincat? Why would you move him?
Well, they're going to have to pay him. And he's got another year left with a real cash value of $9 million. And that's going to be pretty expensive, I would imagine. I don't think they're moving him, but I do think that first off, nothing's happening until they're hiring a GM. So yes. I don't even think it's necessarily fair to talk about, because I think really the plan heading into it, I think there was some surprise that the Blackhawks really put their foot down and put the pedal to the metal in terms of getting this GM hired. I'm thinking this person could be hired this week. That I think for a while, everyone was believing heading into the deadline that Kyle Davidson was going to be in charge, because the search had been so slow moving that, basically, the idea or notion that other teams got were the three Hawks untouchables were Kane, Taves, and Seth Jones. And that, teams had sort of, begun to poke around on DeBrincat a little bit. I think a few teams had tried to make a run at Brandon Hagel. I think there was lots of interest in him, maybe a little bit in Kubalik. But that's, the prices I think were really high to get really, really high to get players like DeBrincat and Hagel.
Well, Frank, lots to discuss and digest on this pod. We have a special guest I'll let you get to in a second coming up on Friday. This edition, of course, brought to you by DoorDash. NHL hockey is back tonight. You don't want to cook? Get DoorDash delivered. All your favorites, go to DoorDash and they will help you out. For me, everybody has their own different favorites, Frank, but I'll be honest. I used it for taco time the other day.
Oh,
not going to lie. Haven't had a soft taco.
What's your ideal taco?
I just like a soft taco at taco time.
But you go beef, and then what are your toppings?
Oh, beef. I don't like tomatoes on it. So I will go, lettuce. I like avocado now on my taco. I'm a big fan of avocado, sour cream, the hot sauce they have at taco time. I don't know what's in it, but it's sick. And that's probably about it. Yeah. I don't like a ton of, and cheese, obviously. I'll go with extra cheese if I can. Like when I make homemade tacos, Frank, I put on a few different cheeses, because my wife and I, we like to try a lot of different cheese. So coconut Gouda, I tried it on a taco at home. Top notch.
How very Gouda. Cheesy of you.
Yeah. And who do we got coming on Friday?
That would be Bane Pettinger of CAA Sports, the NHLPA's only openly gay agent. And more to the point, someone who's really made a lot of inroads, is close and tight with a number of NHL players. And so looking forward to having Bane on to tell his story and talk about his journey. And let's talk a little hockey as well.
Oh, it's going to be fun. Games are back. And man, the next few weeks for some teams, you got teams playing anywhere from 7 to 8 games in the next 2 weeks. It's for some teams. Meanwhile, the Sharks don't play until Valentine's Day. So odd schedule as they allow the teams who have played a lot of games to rest. And the teams who are down like 42, 43, they're going to play a ton. So it'll be interesting to see the next 2 weeks, how that unfolds. Frank, have a good one. We will talk to you on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Are you ready for playoff hockey? Well, listen up, because I've got something for you. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with 4 questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of the questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. Simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total for the game is going to go over or under a certain amount, and the strategy doesn't stop there. Next up, you're picking which player is going to light the lamp first, and finally, you got to predict which period in the game is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That is all up to you. Now let's talk prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. That's right. Treat yourself to some nation gear or even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the round winners, cash money. Cold, hard cash. We're putting real dough in your pockets simply for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. It's game time, folks. Head over to games.dailyfaceoff.com now and prove your puck prowess.